Hello, and welcome back to Pints and Pairings. I am Curtis Taylor, also known as Hot Pets Ed.
And I'm Jason Hendrick, the hungry man from Everybody's Hungry, and we are facing each other for this segment. Hey,
would you look at that? So if this is the first one you're listening to, it's not going to mean a whole lot. But once you get to the Whitbeer one and the pre-show one, where we were actually facing each other, but I had the camera angles mixed up, so it looked like we were sitting back to back. I don't know how I missed that, but it's a goofy kind of thing.
And just to think, the end of the last segment, we were talking about how in the groove we were and how back on track we were.
That's how you totally throw everything out the window, right? Yep, there is exactly. By saying, hey, I don't know, but things are working really great right now.
Oops. But we are still mowing on these beautiful raspberries as well, which I think are going to still continue to pair well with this next beer we're bringing up.
They sure could. Before we get going, I want to give a shout out to the Beer Cave, which is located at Village on the Commons Boulevard in Camarillo, California. They are the beer supplier, provider. They are our beer sponsor. However you want to talk about it, they are giving us the beer for this show.
And the reason they're on board and that we are endorsing them is the selection at the Beer Cave is amazing. The variety of beers and the styles available to you, you can't beat it. There's a lot of opportunity there for you to just taste some awesome beers and numerous styles. Sammy's stocking the shelves with great stuff, and it's the place to go in Camarillo if you want quality beer.
Yeah, they know their stuff. They tasted it. So if you go in and are having a hard time picking something, they can help you out. Plus, they always know what's brand new. So if you're always looking to try the next new thing coming through the door, they've got it. Also, they've got a deli right next door. And so in my spare time, I go in and we taste some meat and some cheeses and we sit down.
I just happen to go drink beer.
And right. And I sit down with Sammy, the owner, and we eat we taste some different meats and come up with some sandwiches and some beer pairings. So look for those at the Beer Cave and the Village Commons Market.
And just to knock out the housekeeping, if you have never heard of the Beer Cave before and you're listening to the show and this is your exposure to them, make sure you let them know when you get in there, hey, I heard about you on Pints and Pairings. It's a great plug for us, but it also shows that Sammy's getting the message out the way he hopes. And if you're going to tweet us, if you're going to put any postings or any Instagram photos up there of your own beer or your own suggestions, use the hashtag Pints and Pairings or hashtag Beer Suggestioneers. You can tweet at Everybody's Hungry, EveryBodys Hungry, or at Hophead Said. You also can find it at hopheadsaid.com and everybodyshungry.org. We've got some cool pages up for all these past shows, and you can subscribe on iTunes. We're trying to saturate the market.
And you did that without any note cards or anything. You just kept rattling off stuff. I'm like, that sounds good.
You know, getting you on board with too, though, is the Instagram. That's a hot ticket. I heard through some stats and a friend's discussion that Instagram is taking over. I mean, they're owned by Facebook, but it's taking over Facebook in terms of popularity with the very younger generations. Photo sharing and delivering messages through photos is the most popular method right now, apparently. I think Facebook's more diverse in terms of, you know, events and links and opportunity to get messages out in a variety of ways, but Instagram is starting to take over. So if you want to take some cool beer pictures or you want to take a picture of your meal that you think goes well with the beers we're talking about, again, use hashtag Pints and Pairings.
And let us know about it. We'll be happy to respond to it. And, well, Jason will because I'm not on Instagram, but Jason will be happy to
and Instagram is Everybody's Hungry.
And he'll let us know. He'll let me know that somebody's doing, is posting to Instagram. So we are continuing with BJCP category 16. And we're actually in the subcategory 16C, which is Saison. Now, Hennepin, which is from Brewery Omegang, was my first farmhouse ale, which can easily be classified as a Saison. As soon as I had that, I was hooked.
They're often synonymous. Farmhouse ale and Saison are often interchangeable. Not always, and we'll talk about that a little bit later in the segment, but oftentimes, especially for a lesser educated beer enthusiast or someone who's just starting to get into the scene, those two can almost go hand in hand.
Yeah, and it's been a favorite style of mine forever. And one of the things that I have found interesting in drinking as many Saisons as I've had, as I have done, is that there is a difference between, imagine this, American Saisons and Belgian Saisons.
Hey, Curtis, which one is stronger?
Crazy, huh? Well, and so a Saison, which is French for season, was a beer that was given to the farmhands, so the seasonal workers, much like what we have all over the place, all over America, people moving into a spot just to do the agricultural work, then they move on. So these seasonal workers, this was the way that they stayed hydrated because water supplies were suspect, bacteria infections and the like. The only way that they knew that they weren't going to become infected was by drinking a beer that had been boiled for, in some cases, some of these were like 12-hour boils, which is way past whatever they needed to do.
But when we think about such a long boil, it's still a low grain bill and a low alcohol percentage. So we're coming in.
Well, historically, yes.
Historically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, these were beers that were at 1.5% to 3% tops, you know, and they were spontaneously fermented. The wind blew the yeast through the barn windows. It fell into the wort. It fermented.
And some breweries are still leveraging that method, that very old world natural process, and they're coming out with great products.
Well, and one of them that we just had from the Witch Show was Allagash, and they have a cool ship program where they open up their louvers and let the natural main yeasts go in for spontaneous fermentation. So it still happens today, and it happens all around the world. Now, fast forward to today, and these beers generally come in at about 6%, which is double the strength what they used to be.
And they're often year-round.
And almost always year-round, you know, because these beers are approachable, again, for a number of reasons. You know, they're light-bodied, they're light-colored. They don't have a bitterness. They don't have... they're generally a little lower in the banana and the clove area, but they have a pleasing barnyard aroma that a lot of us can relate to, especially if you grew up anywhere near an agricultural center.
And the one we have in front of us is the Shiner FM966 Farmhouse Ale. As you mentioned, lower on the clove and the banana, but still heavy on the fruit. The nose on this one immediately takes me to prosciutto wrapped melon. There's a sweetness there. There's a little underlying saltiness to it for me. And it seems like a really easy pairing right off the bat. Great prosciutto wrapped cantaloupe or melon.
Yeah, there is a nice, a really nice salty, maybe it's the very last thing you pull out of it. You get all the big aromas, and then as this mineral salt kind of aroma is what is left when you exhale. Getting back to, before we go on any further though, I want to, the difference between the American and the Belgian ones, and I actually prefer the Belgian ones. They tend to be a little drier. And if you think about why that is, because they were, so many of them, especially like Saison DuPont, the world example of a Saison, it's bottle conditioned, it's put on a boat, it's shipped to the US, it sits in a warehouse, it's shipped everywhere else. So the bottle conditioning itself dries it out a little bit. And I actually prefer ones that are a little drier. This one, however, is a happy medium between. I've had some Saisons that are really banana clove. This one is a really nice in between.
Yeah, this is a great crisp beer. There is the little bit of banana that I think I am gravitating towards is almost a caramelized banana, where it's been sprinkled a little bit of sugar, so you get some of those caramelized little toasty notes of the sugar on top of the banana, but then the underlying sweetness and almost, dare I say, maybe even a pinch of nutmeg.
Well, I think from the yeast profile and the yeast spices that we're picking out through this, it's certainly possible. I like to think, maybe equate it more towards an arugula, maybe, you know, kind of a nutty sort of spice. But those, and maybe, yeah. I mean, listen, nutmeg.
Yeah, well, I can see that though, because there is a little bit of a root vegetal aspect to it. You know, you're thinking turnips and artichoke, rutabaga. I mean, all those, artichoke isn't a tuber root vegetable in the same way as the rutabaga or the turnips, but there is that little bit of vegetal spice and a little bit of kind of bite that mm-hmm. comes out of it.
Well, I think you're on to something really great with the artichoke. You know, I'd pulled up a couple things and I was looking back through some of the previous beer pairings that I've done. And I see this whole list of Saison things. I'm like, oh yeah, I remember I wrote about these. Oh yeah, look at this one. But one of them that I haven't done, and I've done artichokes before, but it was not with this one. It was with a wit beer, which makes sense too, but it was a stuffed artichoke. And that tart vegetal artichoke flavor is really similar, and especially if you're boiling that, if you're just eating the artichoke plain too, because we put a lot of salt in the water when we boil, and just as you pull a leaf off and you
get that nice flesh.
That's,
and I've been a little distracted off camera a little bit because I'm pulling up my info packet from when we did cheese in a glass at Barrel House 101 and we did the beer pairing. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the Omegang Hennepin Farmhouse Saison at the beginning of the show. We used that in our pairing for that particular event, and we put it with a Sage Derby cheese. So again, getting into that herb and vegetal aspects, the sage-infused cheddar kind of base for that Sage Derby cheese was a really cool and unique pairing that people weren't expecting, because it drew out some of the sweetness and some of those spicy notes that the Farmhouse Saison was wanting to deliver but needed the cheese to bring out.
Well, and the... that beer in particular, the Hennepin, is a very mild version of it too. And so you can find beers that have a more aggressive, this one I think has a more aggressive spice profile to it. And so, but that doesn't mean that you couldn't do it. But like that Spice Derby or the Sage Derby would certainly help that beer. And that's one of the things that we always talk about in these beer pairings, is finding something that in the food that helps the beer, or something in the beer that helps the food, and putting those two together to accentuate it. It's a resonating pairing. We haven't talked about those terms in a long time, but you know, you found those spices that resonate together, that they pull each other together and accentuate it.
And there's an underlying sweetness that is lingering on my palate with this particular beer. I'm having trouble picking it out, but my mind goes to almost like a duller sweetness, like a papaya or even a little bit of a passion fruit, where it's not a sugary punch in the mouth, but it has a nice basic sweetness, maybe even a sweet potato kind of aspect, mm-hmm. going back to those root and tuber vegetables. I think maybe it's just the time of year with the cool air, I'm thinking stews and roasted potatoes, but it seems to work for me.
Well, when you said Sage Derby, one of the things I thought about is fried sage leaves, you know, and they come to you just crispy, light as air. You could probably bake them if you were opposed to the fried, but you bite in, you know, lightly salted, you just bite it, it falls apart like a potato chip in your mouth as an accompaniment maybe to the cheese or to just to the beer as a light sort of appetizer beforehand. I think that would be a really fabulous taste exploration.
And I'm really getting just enamored with the season. I'm really being pulled into the season with these beers and with the outdoors, kind of the way they're changing right now, because my mind and my belly, my savory focus is starting to shift into soups. Creamier based soups or heartier soups, mm-hmm. a great butternut squash soup, maybe even a cream corn soup where there's some heavy sweetness but a cream and a little tang in there. You know, any kind of those roasted root vegetables we talked about, pureed into a great soup, cream of potato, cream of mushroom, I think is probably outside the realm a little bit, but a creamy, heartier kind of soup would be a great pairing with this, especially if you're sprinkling it with a little bit of a, like maybe a salty fried pancetta or something, or a little sprinkle of salty Parmesan to bring out the saltiness of this beer that we were talking about at the beginning.
Well, you know, when you talked about, when you said butternut squash, the sweetness that you were talking about, I mean, you were so close to it because you were talking about sweet potato. Think about that the butternut squash sweetness, that residual sweetness. And I think for me, that's what is kind of the base sweetness flavor in there. And you know, that leads to a beer pairing that I did at one point, which was a risotto. And we talked about risotto with the whipped beers. Again, these saisons have a healthy dose of wheat in it. So if you find something that has a wheat-based flavor in it, that will help just to kind of put everything together, the bridge that ties, or, you know, the layer that ties everything together. But then you add, it was a butternut squash risotto. So you cube up the butternut squash, you roast it, so you pull out all the sweetness and just get a really intense flavor. Throw those little chunks into the risotto at the same, you know, as you're serving it. And with this beer, because the beer is light, it's going to cleanse your palate. It's going to give you another dose of sweetness and spice that you find in the dish.
And the sweet and the spice, as well as that cleansing factor you're talking about, though, lends itself to a fattier dish, too. When we're breaking into some more unique meats in terms of maybe kind of game birds, grouse or pheasant, or maybe even squab. Something that is going to be a little darker and richer in flavor in the meat, but also have a good fat content. You could do seared pork belly, which stand up to this really nicely. Basic seasoning of salt and pepper. I have a lavender salt at home I use on pork belly that would add a floral component that would draw out some of those notes in the beer. But it would definitely cut through that richness in the fat, and some of the fruit tones that we're getting in the beer will draw out a little bit of the sweetness of the meat too.
Right. And even if we were to go, you know, you're talking about really rich flavored foods too. Talking about, we hit the Sage Derby cheese, but what about going to the other end, the super cream, the double cream, some funk rind, maybe
the funk
even,
rind would heighten and enlighten the funk that's already in the beer,
right? And maybe even on the bluer side of it too, something that's a little sharp. So you've got these double cream, triple cream, funk rind that are just, you know, the funk, that's the mold that's on the cheese and the yeast that
so
was
that's
used.
One big plate of resonance right there.
Right.
But the blue cheese, crazy. In contrast.
Well, and then, but then you've got the palate cleansing of the beer, which will help, even though that's a big salty cheese over there, you get to the blue cheese where there's still that underlying funk between the two, the beer and the
there's
cheese.
There's a pungency there.
But that sharp was, you know, between the two is, it's going to heighten both of them.
And not to mention, when you think about mouthfeel and the kind of the residual coating of your mouth when you're eating, especially a big creamy blue cheese with a lot of pungency, this beer will help wash that away in a pleasing way. It won't just be a glass of water that washes it away with no flavor. It's going to tingle a little bit with some of those nuances that the cheese is bringing out as well.
Yeah, and just lift it up as it's cleansing your palate too. Lift it up, vaporizing it basically. And so on your exhale too, so, you know, one of the things that we don't talk about a lot, we're just talking about putting everything in and not worrying about it. But the exhale too.
If you're eating a lot of blue cheese though, make sure you're not exhaling on anyone directly.
Well, and this was when we talked about this beer at the very beginning, I was talking about how that saltiness is kind of the last thing that's there. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of because you've taken it all in and you exhale, it's mixing things up again a little bit and you're getting that minerally, I don't know necessarily what to call it, because calling it salt may turn somebody off, but there's a
certain salinity there. I mean, salt is a very direct term that people associate with table salt, I think,
right.
But there's a certain salinity there that you're getting a reminiscence of salt.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing too that we have talked about in the past but don't highlight as much is the incorporation of oxygen. So while you're exhaling, it's important to inhale during those bites and in between bites as well. The oxygen opens up all those organic compounds, and some of those flavors that were very subtle or indiscernible at the beginning may really open up and surprise you as you're bringing in more oxygen.
So one of the things, as you were just talking there, just kind of blew out was the salinity. And as soon as, and that's something that I use all the time when I'm talking about shellfish. And mm-hmm. So think about mussels. Yeah, that brine. So think about even this beer with mussels. Now, this isn't an earth-shattering pairing. This is something that Belgians have been doing forever. They steam their mussels in their beer. They're serving it with beer. Here's why. Because of that salty, earthy brininess, and the way that there is a connection with the beer already. So, I mean, they came together for a reason because they taste good. And it's just, it's been a traditional pairing for hundreds of years.
That's a great pairing. And I'm glad you brought that up. It makes me want to go out and get some canned shellfish that have been cured.
Mm-hmm.
I was up at a food show a handful of months ago, and there was a company from Spain that was there looking for distributors in the United States, looking to import their product. They had this awesome cured and brined razor clams. I don't know if you've ever seen a razor clam, but it's a long, thin clam, and it had some of that brininess you're talking about, some sweetness, a little bit of chewiness for texture. It was gorgeous and exotic shellfish I'd never had before. Thanks for bringing out the mussels. You are the muscle of this show, my friend.
No, well, it's one of the best things about it when we're throwing these things back and forth, and we've done it to each other plenty of times where one of these concepts or flavors or something just kind of spurs you. And that's why, you know, we've talked about it in the past too, you know, before we kind of put this episode to bed, is just to remind people too that when you're eating these things and you're sitting around the table and you're having your conversations and everything else, don't forget to talk about the food. And I know
some people will poo-poo that.
Well, some people maybe, I don't want to talk about it because it may sound like I'm fishing for a compliment, whatever it is. But talking about the flavors that you've put together and making sure that your guests know that you want to know what their perceptions are so that you can become
a
better
parent.
The table
is a communal, the kitchen and the dining table are communal locations. It's a place for people to get together. And the more, believe it or not, for those individuals who say, I just want to grab a quick bite or I want to eat my meal and be done, talking about the food the way we do may be a little much for you, but there's a happy medium, because when you start talking about your food, as we mentioned in the past, flavors, textures, dishes, there's a certain level of sense memory there. There's a nostalgia sometimes that comes out depending on the dish and the pairing.
Mm-hmm.
It brings up stories. It gets people re-engaged with things of their past or goals of their future, and they start interacting on a different level, and topics will come up, you know, from what their grandmother used to make or what they enjoyed when they were in a certain country. And now you're engaging on a level that's, in my opinion, kind of lost right now. People are not engaging each other in a story time kind of fashion that gives you insight into who they are.
Well, yeah. And especially, you know, just for our own purposes too, that this show would not be as much fun or as interesting if it was just me talking about all of my ideas between it. And so this is what, when you're sitting down at a table with everyone talking about ideas, pulling it together but maybe framing the tasting session or the pairing as a pairing party where people are free to offer their suggestions and working together with a group of friends to put together these perfect pairings that, you know, we all have these sense memories and experiences. And when we put them together, you know, the sum of the parts is greater than the whole kind of thing, or whatever the expression is, that when you get all these people together, it's more powerful to more opportunities for us to make breakthroughs, I guess.
Most definitely. And as we put a little bow in this episode, I think you and I in this show are a prime example of what we're talking about. We're pretty good friends. We hang out outside of the show. We enjoy beers together in other settings, but we've only known each other maybe a little over a year, if that.
Yeah.
And each time we sit in these chairs and we talk about these foods and the beers together, more of our backgrounds come out and we get to engage each other on different levels and we learn more and more. And it happens at everybody's table. If you sit down and have a good meal, partner with an awesome beer, go back and listen to some of our past episodes for some suggestions, but get around the table. Talk about what you're eating and drinking. You don't know what's going to come up after that.
Perfect. That's a great way to end this episode. Give us a like on Facebook, Radar, iTunes, podcasts, YouTube. There's 60 some different videos on Hophead Said. of that, there's probably 40 of those are from us for our pints and pairings. Otherwise, it's happy hour, and that's a lot of fun too. It's not sure. beer centered, but that's a lot of fun. So go like all those. Go to everybody'shungry.org. Give Jason a shout out and take a look at all of his stuff.
And feel free to post your own suggestions. We're looking for all kinds of feedback. We want your involvement. We want to engage the show. You can also use the hashtag pints and pairings or hashtag beer suggestioneers when you're tagging photos on Instagram, or if you're tweeting us at Hophead Said or at Everybody's Hungry, EVRY, Buddy's Hungry. Got to drop an E because those damn restrictions, those character restraints.
As always, I want to remind everyone to eat, drink, and be hoppy.
And we'll see you at the next pour.
Cheers.